WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I got some beautiful skies over here. We bring you the recon here each and every week. It's a little freeform segment Don and I do. It was my idea. He likes it more than I do, but we debate, argue, and if there's ever a point, Don, some people think you and I are like 1 and 1A and we agree on everything. And I'm like, oh, no. This was not Nestor inviting Don on to pat him on the back, although you do that far more often than I need you to, or win best of awards. But the recon was sort of, and I want to borrow from Dan Rodericks here, okay? Because I love Dan. Dan was a mentor to me, still is a mentor to me. Hopefully we're going to fly fish together and glamp together out on the Savage River in late August on the Crab Cake Tour. But Dan would call it a gripe session. I don't know that I want it to be gripey because we're Baltimore Positive, and I don't know that I bitch so much in the session, but I do know we disagree often here. But I want to play nice with you to begin with, because you're going to Bowie this week. I'm going to Bowie next week. Phil Rye was on from Bowie last week. Alan and I were discussing the merits of, you know, I guess this is what you do when the Orioles stink. You go to Bowie, right? Because this should be good. I mean, there's real belief in these kids, and there should be. These are real prospects.
Oh no, they're real prospects. This will be our second trip to Bowie. We're actually going to because Rodriguez is pitching and number one pitching prospect in all minor league baseball. Listen, Nestor, I approach prospects. You often accuse me of having the orange colored glasses on. I approach prospects eyes wide open, and you know we've had prospect after prospect over the years that we could point to that didn't make it.
How many names you want to go through? You want to play that game? That would be fun. Oh, I'd say I know Bob you Bonner, can. And then you'd say Steve Dalkowski, and I'd say Jim Fuller, and you'd say Drungo Hazewood. And we'd go through it all day, right?
We can go on and on and on. You know, Bob, you mentioned Bobby Bonner. You know, one of my favorite stories, and there are so many Weaver stories, and you can talk to Singleton and Cal and others about Earl stories and Jim Palmer. But one of my favorite stories that I always remember about Bobby Bonner was people wanted to blame Earl about Bonner not developing in the major leagues as a shortstop and not being able to field the way they thought he would, not being able to, that Earl screamed too much and made Bonner nervous. And I remember Earl reacting and saying, let me explain something to you. The base is loaded in the bottom of the ninth, and a ball is rocketed out to shortstop. If my yelling at you is making you so nervous that you can't suddenly throw the ball to first base, I don't have a whole lot of confidence that you're going to catch that ball in the bottom of the ninth. His point being, come on, get over it. You can either play or you can't. So you're right. The point being that we've seen a lot of prospects, and I think I mentioned to you before, Matt Wieters was a good major league player. I think he made four All-Star games. I think we looked that up one day. Matt was a solid major league player. He wasn't a great major league player. He's not a Tatis. He's not a Soto. And in order to compete in modern baseball, which is, and you've been on it, you've been talking about this for a long time now, it's a strange game. It's not the game you and I grew up with. I mean, it's strikeouts and spin rates. It's a different game.
Oh, I had Bill Madden on this week. Wrote a book on Tom Seaver. Bill Madden's covered baseball for 45 years at the New York Daily News. Wrote books on Steinbrenner. By the way, he told the story of being in the bar at the Cross Keys when Billy Martin and Ed Wilson.
Oh, wow.
He was in the middle of like breaking it up. And so, I mean, a great story. So, but like, you know, the history of baseball, man, I love baseball. You love baseball.
I love it, but it's changing. And back to the point about Wieters, as I said, Wieters never became great. We thought what we hope Adley Rutschman will be is what we hoped Wieters would be. And it never happened. Now, Here's the nice thing about it. I have the Bowie app on my phone, and I check the Bowie app more often at night when I'm watching an Oriole game, going back and forth. You know, I may not watch all.
Yeah, I'm not that vested anymore. You know, I can wake up and find out that Rutschman hit a homer last night and like that.
No, I follow them a couple times a night to see.
I wish I cared as much as I used to. I just don't.
Who's doing well? I know you and I have talked about that.
I'm not ashamed of that. I mean, I just. you know, you haven't walked in my shoes the last 15 years, but either way, even if you haven't, I haven't walked in your shoes, is paying them to go and watch awful baseball and tell me that they're regrouping and all that.
Where,
you know,
one of the points you mentioned that we often agree to disagree, where you and I probably agree to disagree stronger on a topic than any other, is the role that sports plays in life for people. And I've said to you many, many times, for me, it is recreational. For me, it is having fun with the grandkids and enjoying it for what it is, entertainment, much like a movie or much like watching Mayor of Easttown or Dirty John or Lupin. It's entertainment. And the fact that we may not always like the organizational decisions that the organizations make, or
I
that
don't like
someone,
the way the organizations treated the community.
Well,
it's not even about
again,
me. It's about everybody else but me. It's how everyone's been treated, quite frankly.
And you and I could
it's
disagree
on that.
It's been
more of an ethos issue that's been the pink elephant, the orange elephant sitting in the middle of the room, and now the team's in last place. And I think it's great. Because in the old days, we didn't have Bowie, right? We had Rochester, Charlotte. You know, in the old days, you couldn't just get in the car and go see your prospects, right?
Right.
And then there's the other part of this where 3 or 4 weeks from now, at least one or two of these kids is going to be in Norfolk, right? So, like, you're not – if you don't go now, after the All-Star break, I would think one, two, maybe all three will be in Norfolk. Maybe – I don't think any of these kids are coming up this year because of – the starting their clock and all the money part of it. But this is a really limited opportunity to see kids pitch in Bowie. There's 2 weeks here. They're going to sell a lot of games out. I'm going to go the next time he pitches, next week.
Yeah. No, I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked if two or three or four of them do not. I keep telling my grandsons, you know, Jake and Grady and Brooks, they all want – they. They're like, oh, they want instant gratification, as we all do.
I want them to wag their finger in my face 8 years from now at the parade. Believe me, you know, I harbor no anti-Baltimore.
No. But the issue is for you, and again, I know you're trying to sort it out. The joy, you don't have joy in sports anymore. That's what I've told you. And to me, sports can be still joyful. You know, whether it's watching the Catonsville Comets lacrosse team try to win a state championship, whether it's watching Nokovic try to, you know, just do incredible things at the French Open, whether it's reading about the Ravens wide receiver group. You know, I don't care how certain people in the organization behave or don't. Now, in terms of these two organizations, both have been very good to me. I mean, they've been very
It's not
nice,
even, it's behavior
courteous.
Toward an ethos, not behavior
yeah,
toward
but I don't
you
agree. I don't even know.
Because you're
what,
a county
even,
executive
I don't even
or
know
connected
what
to big wigs or me because I have a microphone. It's more about
I don't know what that means.
What are you doing to win? What are you doing to be accountable? Not to me, but in general. And what are you – what is the stake in the community for you, your people, your ownership, your players, your legends, your heroes, the partnerships, all of that?
Well, I would suggest that both organizations – you know, obviously the Ravens – the Ravens, by all accounts, here we go again, folks. I know this, we were going to do, and we will get to some current events, but Nestor and I get off on these tangents.
Well, it's not a bad week. The Ravens have minicamp this week. If you're a Ravens fan, this is a week you should be engaged. If you're an Orioles fan, it's been hard to be engaged, but you're going to Bowie, and I'm going to Bowie.
I've also been to Camden Yards several times, and we'll be back to Camden Yards soon. But by all accounts, the Ravens are a model organization. They have great people in that organization, top to bottom. They are invested in the community. They treat people the right way, and they've got people who were in the organization, like Kevin Byrne, who no longer are, but serve as a consultant, who just are some of the finest people I've ever known. Dick Cass, one of the finest men I've ever known. So they have quality people. But even if they were not quality people, it would not take away from me. I love that they're quality people. It makes it more fun. But if they were not,
you had the Bengals or the Browns the last 20 years, you might feel differently about it, Don.
But I would still root for the team and have
Ursay.
Fun.
We know what that's about. Angelos can't be much worse than Angelos. Really.
Well, but you
really,
there are things that good and bad about people. You conveniently forget the 5 or 6 years under Buck where we were the best team in baseball. You just whitewash that because, and again, we've been over it because you will never get over your feud with Peter Angelos. I get it. I'm never going to talk you out of that. And but therefore, the 5 or 6 years where we were the best team in baseball, you just pretend.
There's no feud. There's accountability. It's simple.
You pretend it never existed. And those were 5 or 6 really great years. It was fun to be an Oriole fan. But the bigger issue, and again, you can't make somebody like or not like something. It's like when we talk about movies. I love movies. Our friend Max Weiss loves movies. You don't love movies, but you love concerts. So the passion for you, the entertainment for you, is concerts more than sports. And maybe it's after 30 years, it's just worn you out and it's not fun anymore. But it, you know, for...
No, see, Dennis and I got into this. My wife's had sports on all weekend. I watched the French Open all weekend. I watched the Orioles play over the weekend, and I can't figure out why they had football markings on the field in Tampa. I watched Cedric Mullins lay out. I watched Trey Mancini hit the other way against the Mets last week when they were losing 8-1. Sounds like he's asleep.
And enjoying are two very, very different
things. I've enjoyed watching the Islanders play hockey and watching my friend is 7 victories away from going to the Hall of Fame. So that's where I am in all of this, is in rooting for the good people in the game and finding a way to walk away and say, I'm going to go fly fishing instead of giving my money or time to the last place Baltimore Orioles. Like, I'm just going to go eat crabs instead. I'm going to go talk to politicians instead.
Well,
I'm going to go.
You said no. I said the joy. You're not disagreeing with me. I said the joy.
The value. It's a value issue.
Forget the value. It's about whether it brings you joy or not.
What could bring me joy about the Baltimore Orioles being in last place? I mean, maybe the joy is in you having grandkids and they dig it and that's cool. But like, there's no joy. It's 2 blocks away from me. Nothing fun about sitting in an empty stadium with a mask on last month, watching bad baseball.
Mancini's a joyful story. Cedric Mullins is a joyful story. John Means is a joyful story. Bruce Zimmerman, local loyal Don, is a.
See, I got a soft spot.
I can't convince you because the heart is the heart. I mean, I think this gets us into
Don. I'm just saying, I experienced the game in the other room 5 nights a week. The broadcasts are terrible. The team's not.
But
very
they're not.
Good.
They're not terrible. There's an example. You're just not objective. Kevin Brown is an outstanding young announcer. He's not terrible. He's very, very good.
I haven't heard Kevin Brown. I hear Garceau most of the time.
He's enthusiastic. Scott is good. Scott's as Baltimore gets. McDonald is terrific. Palmer's tired, but
agree.
Jim's still
good. Agree. Ben McDonald's great.
And Jim's still Jim. Jim is Jim tired and probably not going to do it much longer? Yeah, but I'll take Jim as long
Jim's
as I
Jim's tired of losing, too.
Not terrible.
He's been compensated
the only
time.
Reason you think it's terrible is that it's Masson. And you can't get past the Angelos guys.
I think it's terrible because it's terrible.
But it's not a terrible broadcast.
It wasn't terrible when Thorne and Palmer were doing it 6 years ago. It was good, actually. It was terrible when Bordick would do it, but that's another story. I like Mike. Yeah. It wasn't any good.
Yeah, I would suggest to you that Kevin Brown on TV and Greg Arnold Hollander.
Brett
Hound. I mean, he's pretty good too. So that I think the broadcasts are fine. It's just an issue. And as I said, it's just as much about politics, and we can connect it to politics in that one of the mistakes we all make is we're talking hearts and minds. It almost takes me back to Vietnam when we would have these articles about you've got to win the hearts and the minds. And that's this whole issue now in terms of how tribalized we are in the United States of America. We're trying to get to the heart of what's going on. And, you know, no amount of
I give my time where my heart is.
That I'm right. And that's my point, is that you no longer
I no longer deal with people who treat me like
it's
shit.
Not a good or bad.
I walk away from that.
You're bad.
That's better for me than fighting with people for with no purpose. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like fighting with the Orioles, it's like, let them figure it out. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like at this point,
again,
I'll move on and go fly fishing.
And that's what I'm saying. That's the piece that is not going to change. I mean, you have been, for better or worse, you have
honest.
Been, well, you can call it honest, you can call it whatever. You've been unwilling, as they have, to try to strike a peace. You just haven't wanted to move on. You can't get to that place.
I'll move on when my press pass is waiting at the door.
Yeah, but there are ways to do that you haven't been willing to do, and therefore it has sucked the joy out of it for you. And that's
fucking
okay.
Be the key word is what you
that would be
there,
okay.
There's no, we can move on off. This always goes this way, and because it always comes back to like personal with Ant. No, the product sucks. If there was 3 hours of good baseball, I'd watch it. If it was 3 hours of a great broadcast
product,
and it were engaging, I'd watch it. If they were good people, I would come back. I'm not going back.
Here's the difference.
To see this open hole of a franchise to say,
see, you're not,
I'm here, let me in. I don't care to be let in.
Yeah, you're not, that's where you're not fair. You're not paying attention. That's what I'm saying. I really am. You're really not paying attention if you think they're not trying to build something really special going forward. I mean, it's okay to be angry at the family, but to not be objective and not say that Mike Elias and Sid Medall and these folks are trying to build something.
You're
really,
getting
you're
me in the car
objective.
And drive to Bowie next week and give him $10 to watch a kid pitch.
Yeah, but
so
you're not
clearly
objective.
They're doing something that
when
I am going
them,
and reporting on, that I am still engaged with,
a,
that I'm giving a Friday night of my life to go watch minor league baseball. So, you know,
but I'm not sure it's going to bring joy to you. I'm not sure it's going to.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because
we'll find
because,
out.
Well, let's move on. Listen, you said something this week on social media, and I thought, again, not surprising. I thought, geez, I don't agree with that, but I want to hear why Nestor thinks what he does. I thought Keir Simmons on NBC, who's their chief international correspondent, did a really insightful and thoughtful and pointed interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin. And you were angry that NBC had Keir Simmons interview Vladimir
he's
Putin.
He's an international criminal.
Was,
he's a mafia
he's
leader.
He's the leader.
Giving him a platform in America to spew more of his lies that plenty of people in red hats agree with 92% of his agenda. And then they nod their head and they say, oh, Putsky, he's an honest guy. He's a effing gangster, dude.
Okay.
He is not an honest guy. He should not be in your living room being taken seriously as, well, maybe Putsky has a point. We got enough of that going on in this
country.
Again,
that's not it. See, that's
he's already into your relatives on Facebook with information poisoning their minds, and they don't even know it.
See,
I saw it on my own timeline 5 years ago in the middle of an American election where you and Kevin are trying to play by the rules and everybody here is trying to play by the rules and the Russians are putting trash into the minds of low information voters.
And
so you want to have Andy Harris on next week and let him sit here with his racist gun Russian bile? I don't put that on. I don't sanction that on my airwaves because I don't sanction liars. And probably the same reason I don't get along with your buddy Angelos is because to sit here and interview him would allow him to lie, and I would challenge those lies, and he would say, I know more, I have more money, you know, we'll go to press box and call you a liar. Because I dealt with all of that. All of that autocrat all of it. So for NBC to go sit in the middle of the Kremlin signing off on what they're going to say and not do for a guy who murders journalists.
Well, first of all,
murders journalists.
First of all, he did not. Again, I let you rant.
He's a murderer,
Nestor. He's the leader of one of the major.
Why is he the leader? Why is he the leader? Because he's a mafia lead. There are no fair elections there.
Okay,
Nestor. Why is he the leader,
Nestor? Whether it's because we know that there are no fair elections, we know that he's an autocrat. The bottom line is,
let's point that out. Let's not portray him as the leader. He's the leader because he's a gangster. That's why he's the leader.
Come on, Nestor. Point that out before you go. You're more sophisticated.
Well, then let's get our people sophisticated. Let's not dumb it down.
Well, stop. You're more sophisticated than to say, well, he's not really the leader. Of course, he's the leader. He's the leader of a major superpower, and to have a journalist with the chops of Keir Simmons ask him the very tough questions so that people can see him is very, very important. We have to break out of this silo where we only watch and listen to people we like or people that we agree with. Listen.
So you interview him. He lies. He lies more. He says he was duly elected. He says he's never murdered anyone. He's never poisoned anyone. Nadalny's a, you know,
Simmons challenges
a criminal. Like, so you sit there and do that, and then you feed this to idiots in America.
Okay, then
say, oh, well, maybe he's not such a bad guy. I mean, he says he didn't murder anyone. I mean, Trumpsky said he asked him and he said he didn't interfere, so he must have not interfered. That is the poison in the well, Don. That's the difference. That is the poison in the well. Someone like me needs to stand up and say, he's a gangster, he's a murderer, and he's not a leader. He's a leader the way, the Godfather was a leader. He's a leader because he murders people. That's why he's a leader.
All of that is true, and the way that you help.
That's how Lester Holt needs to say, now let's go to the Kremlin for some propaganda.
Yeah. Well, it's not propaganda, Nestor. It's if
anything out of his mouth is propaganda.
If Keir
allow him a microphone, the medium is the message. I'm going Marshall McLuhan on you here. To allow him to speak in that way to millions of people with lies that then get verified in their mind, you know.
I don't think, listen.
Oh, he's got a point. Putski's got a point.
No,
I
don't
really
look
like a murderer. I don't look at him.
I don't believe even Trump voters believe that Vladimir Putin is a good guy. I don't believe that. I think it's one of the really it's one of the really interesting pieces of history that people will be writing about for a very long time is to probably the biggest testimony to Donald Trump's ability to control groupthink among his people was his ability to think that his nestling up with Putin was a good thing. Biden is obviously trying to undo that, trying to reshape the narrative again in a more traditional way, trying to work with, I mean, I think you saw it in the G7 meetings, in the NATO meetings, that world leaders are very appreciative that they once again have an American leader who understands how dangerous Russia can be. And I would suggest that having Putin exposed by Keir Simmons and that,
this is the point where I would say to you, I didn't watch it all. I watched 2 minutes and did he ask him about the NRA? And then I would think to myself, I'm an a-hole for even asking that. You know why?
Whatever
he said, Russia's funding the guns. I mean, Maria Butina. I mean, there's no doubt
he
that Russia
asked,
you're all about the guns, dude. I mean, guns are your issue, and the Russian government has been a big proponent of more guns in America is good. And what difference would it make what Keir asks him? He's a gangster, a liar, And we've seen that on parade here for 4 years with our own government. What happens when you begin lying and sanction lying and call press conferences lying and put Kaylee Mack or whatever the hell her name is out in front of things?
Where we just disagree is you just simply can't ignore and pretend he doesn't exist. A major one of the leaders of a major superpower.
I can't pretend that what he says is credible, Don.
Well, nobody says
giving him a microphone to say, let's see his side of the story.
Then
his
you
side
would
of the story is a lie.
Well, then you would flip it. Listen, one of the really strange talking points that Republicans are on right now, and again, so many of them are head scratchers to me all the time.
Bring
anymore.
These up every week. But now, and none of them, they're all bad shit. So it doesn't matter. But it's
this. Well,
this is a Russian principle. Flood the zone with BS.
I'm trying to move beyond.
Make stuff up.
I'm trying to move beyond that and try to understand the end game and how we make some progress. The latest talking point is, and it's really odd, because their Republican leaders in Congress are now saying Biden shouldn't be meeting with Putin. He's given too much away. Putin's a bad guy. And this is the same. It's as if they truly remember Men in Black. When Tommy Lee Jones had that taser and Will Smith had, and they pointed at your head and you'd forget everything that happened. You know, it's almost like they think they have this black taser. They're going to point at our heads. And we forget that for 4 years, they thought Trump talking about his buddy Vladimir and doing joint press conferences and saying, Vladimir told me it couldn't happen. It didn't happen. So it didn't happen. And they were all in for Trump's boy love affair, you know, with Vladimir. And now we've got a president who's going to go over and look Vladimir in the face and tell him to knock it off and stop the cyber stuff, or we're going to and now they think, oh, we shouldn't be meeting. It's illogical. It's they want to take this black taser, the Tommy Lee Jones taser, point it at our head and say, forget what happened with Trump, and Biden shouldn't be going there. There will be a point. There will be a point where we begin to talk sense again. And you know, if we flip it, Nestor, I'm really fascinated, and you're going to do a lot. And I know we got to run. You got another interview coming up. But it's going to be really fascinating to watch this Maryland gubernatorial election. And people saying, well, how do you jump from Putin and Republicans to Maryland gubernatorial? And
I think it's ideology. It's where people
think. Yeah, I think it's all connected. And you've talked about it. You talked about it with Michael Steele and others. You're going to be talking about it with, you know, the whole group, Wes Moore, Doug Gansler, Rashern Baker, all of them are going to be chatting with us. And longtime Politico in the state of Maryland, Frank DiFilippo, worked for Marvin Mandel, wrote a really interesting piece in Maryland Matters, our friend Josh Kurtz and others down there at Maryland Matters. He wrote an interesting piece where he made the point that you've made quite a bit on this show, which was telling people to pay close attention because Maryland is a very unique state in gubernatorial elections. And he goes back to 2002 when Kathleen Kennedy Townsend lost to Bob Ehrlich. He goes back to 2014 where Congressman Anthony Brown, who was then lieutenant governor.
Well, the Democrats have just really had lousy candidates.
I think he suggests it might even be more than that. And this is what I think is where we end the recon this week. It gives people something to think about when we come back next week. I think Maryland might be more typical of the nation than we think. We think of Maryland as a strong blue state. You pointed out that in gubernatorial elections, it's pretty darn purple. I think Josh Kurtz and others have agreed with you on that. And I think what
in some
hear,
ways that's more fair.
You know what? We should get. Though. I'll reach out to DiFilippo. We should get DiFilippo on to talk because he's got a lot of years of experience in this. I think what I hear him saying, and it drives a lot of people crazy, Nestor, this point I'm about to make, but daggone it, I think there's some truth in it. And I think what I hear, although DiFilippo did not write it this way, is, folks, the bottom line is, whether you like it or not, the burger and the beer question is really, really important. in making political decisions for people. And what I mean by that is, and we got to run, and we'll come back, we'll pick it up next week, is that does it come down in Maryland to who I'd rather have a cold beer with and a burger, or a cold beer and a crab cake? And in 2002, was that Bob Ehrlich? In 2014, was that Larry Hogan? And in 2022, is that going to be one of the many talented Democrats, or will that be Kelly Schultz? Burger and a beer. We're going to come back and talk about it next week. And I'll come back and report on Grayson Rodriguez. And hopefully I'll be able to talk about five innings and 10 strikeouts and one hit. We shall see. The recon, baby.
So what have we learned here? You know, we've learned that a strong Orioles franchise is good for Baltimore. And we've learned that Putin is a gangster and a killer. And it should be left at that. So,
and I want you,
love you even when I disagree with you.
I want you to come back next week and talk about OTAs. And I'm fascinated, Nestor. Here's your homework. I want you to come back and talk about this wide receiver coach, Keith Williams, because the stuff that's being written, I don't know that I've ever seen stuff written
that. We'll see. The proof will be when they catch the ball, or whether they really want to throw the ball, which is another. Yeah. Don't go me down that. I don't get down that highway. I'll get down there with
my good buddy. You're a journalist guy. We got to go. Let's go. Recon. Let's get out of here.
I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.